The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, it is, and it's a Friday, so that's a good thing. Welcome to it, everybody. I'm Nicole Sandler. Happy to be here, even happier that it's Friday. And, hey, check this out. Some people have already gotten their $1,400 checks deposited through direct deposit. That's fast. It's not $2,000, but you know what? It's okay. It really, you know, $2,000 would be better, and $2,000 monthly until this mess ends would be better. But hey, we're on the way, so that's a good thing. Welcome to the show. We've got a fascinating show for you today. Coming up in the last half hour, I'm going to chat with a couple of old friends of mine. And I mean old in every sense of the word, because we are old now. But when I met these guys, we were young. They're old friends from Los Angeles, from my music radio days. When I first met them in the early 90s, they both were doing record promotion for Elektra Records. I was doing music radio. And through the years, we've been friends, although I got to say, you know, I left L.A. in 2000, the end of 2000, and... you know, excuse me, we kind of lost touch, except we stay in touch. And when I talk about, you know, I hate Facebook, but I like Facebook because it allows me to stay in contact with people that I otherwise would have lost touch with entirely. So it serves its purpose, as intrusive as it may be. But we're going to start today calling Minneapolis, because we started the week with our friend Jack Rice, and we're going to end the week talking to Jack Rice again, because he is in Minneapolis. Jack Rice, of course, aside from being a former CIA operative and a radio host and a foreign correspondent, Jack Rice is a defense attorney, and he's from Minneapolis. He's there now. He lives not far from where George Floyd was killed. And he's been covering the trial. And hey, Jack Rice, how are you doing today?
It's great to be with you again.
It's always great to talk to you. And things are, it sounds like there's a lot of action today. First of all, unrelated to the criminal trial of Derek Chauvin, the city of Minneapolis announced a settlement with the Floyd family for $27 million.
Yeah, it's huge. It's the largest payout that's ever been made in the state of Minnesota. Last year, there was another payout for $20 million.
Wow.
By the murder of Justine Maruschek. And so that was massive in its own case. But this one's a big one because it says a lot about what happened with the city and the city's response to this really, really horrible act.
Yeah. And so now, would that be allowed to? Can they use that as evidence in the case? And frankly, jury, you know, voir dire is going on now. So the potential jury pool is not sequestered. They have to hear about this settlement. Will that color their whether or not they can get on the jury?
Well, it shouldn't come in. So generally speaking, they shouldn't learn about this because it really is an acknowledgement of fault. And yet at the same time, what we have right now is we don't have a sequestered jury. You have seven jurors that have been chosen of the 12 plus two alternates. And what they've been instructed to do was to not to go and seek out the media. But at the same time, the judges even acknowledged to them themselves that nobody knows who these people are. So their identities aren't clear. So somebody could walk up to them and simply say, hey, did you hear the George Floyd case settled for $27
million? Yeah.
How does that impact them? It's a big deal.
It's weird that they would announce it right now. I mean, wouldn't you think they would wait? I mean, make that part of the deal that, all right, you're getting $27 million, but we don't announce it until the trial's over?
Yeah, I'm concerned about it for that reason, too, because of the impact that this could actually have on the trial itself. Look, I understand that the city is trying to sort of calm fears, and ideally to some degree this could do that, but this does cause a problem. I mean, I think about cases like these in general, and I understand. I live here. I watch this videotape. I live not far from where this happened, so I see what it means in that sense. And yet at the same time, we still have to have a fair and legitimate due process and trial in a case like this so we can actually figure out what happened. Otherwise, I think it's a sham, and it can't be a sham on any sides.
No, no. So, Jack Rice, I agree. That's why I was really surprised. I mean, it was the last thing I thought I'd hear about today, a settlement in the case. As they're picking the jury, somebody screwed up here, I think.
Yeah, I think they did, too. Okay. I mean, I recognize that there's these are two tracks that are going on at the same time, but I don't think you're doing anybody any favors when you lay out something like this. I mean, let's imagine this. We again have picked seven jurors at this point. Do I, if I were prosecuting this case or do I defending this case, do I go to the judge and say, I want all seven of those jurors back so we can talk to them about what they've heard about this?
Right.
I mean, that's part of the problem. Is there a potential an appellate issue that comes out of this from an undue influence that we're not even aware of? And so this is another problem here where you feel like people should have been talking to one another and simply saying, look, you can at least wait until this case is resolved or right. at least until these jurors are sequestered.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, Jack Rice, I saw some of your comments earlier today about the jury picking, and it goes along the lines of an article I read this morning at The Nation, and the headline reads, "The acquittal of Derek Chauvin has already begun." And they're talking about that the prosecution missed a few opportunities in jury selection, that they seem to be dropping the ball and the defense seems to be doing better. That's the gist of the article. Obviously, it's a lot more entailed than that. But what are your thoughts on how it's going so far?
Well, what I wrote about this the other day was I think the defense is winning.
Oh, really?
I mean, do I think the defense is doing a magnificent job?
Right.
And when I say the defense of Derek Chauvin.
Yes, I'm sorry. I got it backwards. I meant. The defense of Derek Chauvin is winning. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that when you're picking a jury, well, I don't think necessarily the defense is doing the best job. What they are doing is they're picking their moments. And in this particular case, they had a potential juror who came out and said, if I see somebody in handcuffs, well, they must have done something wrong.
Right.
The police must have done this, which tells you they're bent when it comes to the police. And the prosecutors didn't strike that witness.
Right.
So in other words, that is going to be one of the jurors. And remember, I don't need 12. I need one. Mm-hmm. If I get one jury, I get a hung jury. That means it starts over again. I'm winning under those circumstances.
Right. Right. So the prosecution, who are these prosecutors? Are they like the best that Minneapolis has to offer? I mean, Keith Ellison is the attorney general of Minnesota, right? Is he involved in this?
Well, it's a good question. First of all, there's a whole series of prosecutors, and really the prosecutors who are handling this case aren't with the city of Minneapolis, and they're not even with Hennepin County.
Wow.
In fact, what happened was the county, Hennepin County, screwed this case up so bad that the attorney general stepped in this case, and obviously it is Keith Ellison, former Congressman Keith
right.
Ellison, who is the attorney general, but he has prosecutors who are stepping in this case. A very senior prosecutor is lead counsel. There's another prosecutor who's a special prosecutor who was brought in, actually a civil rights lawyer. His name's Jerry Blackwell. And I have to tell you, he's one of the best lawyers I've ever seen. He is magnificent. And so I expect to see some of his work. There are others that have also been put on this team who are very, very good. In fact, I think if I had to choose, well, I like the defense. I think I have a more talented prosecution team than I see on the defense side. But at least as the jury selection is going right now, I'm seeing some really good decisions being made on the defense side, some not so good decisions being made on the prosecution.
Right. And that's the same point being made in this article at The Nation by Ellie Mistal, who I truly respect. He said, the jury selection process, which started this week, shows how the cop who killed George Floyd can and likely will win. Do you think he's being a little too pessimistic here, or do you agree with him?
Well, you know, I'm always hesitant to say that, but what I can say is this, and I've said this on MSNBC and a lot of the other big networks, is that what I know is that when I'm picking juries, and I picked a lot of juries, when I'm picking juries, if I get the right jury, my client walks.
Yeah. Right. And that, because it all comes down to jury selection. So and then there's no way to really know. And again, as we talked about the other day, you're also dealing with all the facial expression cues that you can pick up on. You don't have access to anymore because faces are covered in masks.
Well, actually, you know, that's interesting because that's one of the things that has changed.
Oh, really?
Is that. Oh, yeah, absolutely. If we look at how this was before, and we talked a little bit about this, they've changed the entire layout of this courtroom.
Yeah.
And so, in other words, there is no jury box anymore.
Right, right.
And there is no gallery anymore. And so they've spread people out, and there's a lot of glass in there. And so what the judge has said to these potential jurors is, you can keep your mask on. If you're comfortable removing your mask, please do so.
Oh.
And most of them, in fact, are removing it, which I think is really appreciated by both sides trying to figure out what these people are thinking.
Absolutely.
There is one interesting thing, though, is that one of the things I've seen, and I didn't get a chance to hear about this last juror that they just chose, but prior to this, the first six jurors, five of them are men, one woman.
Wow.
Now, that may be a coincidence. I don't know. But I find it really strange because this has been my experience, and I've been doing this a long time, is that there's a school of thought, sort of old school, and I think it's fundamentally wrong. But I think there's an old school of thought that says that you pick men because men are more calculating, more careful in terms of their decision making, more logical, and women are more emotional. You heard this craziness too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my fear is that we may be seeing some of that because when you look at 5 and 1, that skews strongly that direction. And I can tell you that's idiocy because it's not true at all. It just isn't the case. And I think if people don't really watch and listen to each individual juror, regardless of gender, they can make mistakes in picking a jury. And that's a big part of how you pick a jury. You need to know what's in front of you. I mean, what, meaning individually, who these people are.
Right, right. Now, today, again, they got started a day later than they thought they would, but still, it's the end of the first week. They've only got 7. They need 12 plus how many alternates? At least 4?
Well, it's a great question because I was expecting them to pick 4. Then we came out on Monday and the judge decided they were only going to go with 2. And that surprises me.
That is surprising.
It is surprising when you realize that in the O.J. Simpson trial, they had 12 jurors and 12 alternates.
Uh-huh.
In most of the trials that I handle, we have 12 jurors and usually 2 alternates because the trials might last a week to 2 weeks at a time. This could go at least a month.
Mm.
And if we think about the intensity of this trial, the nature of this trial in terms of its publicity, and frankly, we're still in the middle of a pandemic, although I think we're all hopeful.
Yeah.
You add all of those things in. Let's imagine what happens if 2 of those people drop for whatever reason, whether they get COVID, whether or not they get sick, whether or not they get lost, whether or not they freak out and lose their mind, whether or not they do something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose a third person, you don't have a jury and you get a mistrial.
Right.
And this whole thing starts over.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's really surprising to me because the most nothing jury trial has 2 alternates. You would think
right.
They would take extra precautions here. It sounds like they're setting themselves up for failure.
Well, it sort of does, doesn't it?
I mean,
I've been scratching my head on this one for some time now watching it, and they have space for 14. So they certainly could do those 14 jurors, but they have space for 16. They could have
right.
done the 12 plus 4 more.
Right.
So I think under those circumstances, I'm a little confused by why Judge Cahill made this decision, because he gets to dictate.
Mm.
Now, remember, of those 14 or 16 jurors with the alternates, the defense gets 15 strikes. the prosecution gets 9 strikes. They're at less than half a dozen strikes each. There's been a bunch of people who've been removed for something called cause.
Right.
And they can't be fair. And it's the judge who actually makes that call ultimately. Huh.
Okay. All right. Well, this is going to go on for a while. So are they done for today and now they pick up again Monday?
Yeah, they pick up again Monday. I think that what we're seeing is, at least I expect probably at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, there's going to be a real conversation that's going to be had, and it's likely live so people can watch it, about this settlement. And this is without any jurors in there.
Right.
To say, what are we going to do?
Right.
How are we going to handle this moving forward? And more importantly, how do we handle this with the previous 7 that we've already picked?
Yeah, because this changes a lot. I mean, and yes, I mean, I would look at it and say, okay, the city is paying the family $27 million. Obviously, they're admitting fault. Obviously,
right.
They were wrong here. It was, I'm blown away by this. When I saw the news
screen. I can give you actually 2 different arguments, and they cut different directions. The one argument is that obviously their fault, just exactly what you're saying. Look at how Minneapolis screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
The other argument that I might make on the defense side would be this. I agree. Minneapolis screwed up in this case. And in fact, if you look at what Derek Chauvin did, Derek Chauvin used a technique that the city of Minneapolis had already okayed.
Right.
They said, no, you should use this.
Right.
So in other words, we have a police officer who was using a technique that was accepted by the police because they deemed it to be fair and safe. And if they deemed it to be fair and safe and they paid it out, it's because they screwed up and it wasn't Derek Chauvin. You may see a piece of that if something rolls itself out.
Hmm. All right. Well, all right. A lot of pieces still to come together. Obviously, it's the beginning of this thing, but I'm not a sports person, but I'll say that's an unforced error that the prosecution. Well, it didn't. It wasn't the prosecution that happened to them, I suppose. I don't know.
Right. No, yeah. I think that this is a mistake, and this is going to make the prosecution of this case more difficult.
Yeah.
And while the strongest piece of evidence, regardless, is still 8 minutes and 46 seconds of videotape.
Absolutely.
There is no question about that.
Yeah, to me, that's all I need to see.
Case.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I said, that man murdered George Floyd. It would keep me from being on the jury, but it's a no-brainer to me.
Well, and I think there's a lot of people who are feeling that way. And that's one of the reasons that so many of these are being struck for cause.
Yeah, I
gotcha.
Because
if you say that and you say, well, then there's no way you could possibly be swayed one direction or the other based upon the evidence. And the answer is you're absolutely right.
Wow.
This is going to be quite a challenge.
Yes, it is. Jack Rice, I so appreciate you jumping on and keeping us on top of things. We will check in, I'm sure, again next week, I hope.
Always, always. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Take care. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Jack Rice, find him at jackricelaw.com or on Twitter at Jack Rice, just how the name sounds. He's one of the really good guys. All right. So I told you we've got the interview coming up. There's some stuff we can talk about. Joe Biden addressed the nation last night. He is Joe Biden. What can I tell you? He did what I thought was needed. And I'll tell you, though, what I need right now, we are at the just about the 1-year mark. In fact, I think I've got weird dates in my book. Wednesday of next week, that's the 17th, that's St. Patrick's Day. Wednesday is the 1-year anniversary of the first time that COVID had been diagnosed in all 50 states. Right. In fact, for me, I have been home since March 22nd. Right. At this point last year, I was still, trying to play the system, game the system. And I was volunteering weekends at the Broward County Animal Shelter, helping to get dogs adopted. And, it was like every day we didn't know if they were going to kick us out. And finally, on the 22nd, they said, that's it. We're closed. You got to go home. So I've been home since then. So, of course, some of our favorite song parodyists have been working on on this very subject. So let's hear a funny, because we haven't in a few days, you know? It's been a while. This is Zach Timpson, and with his ode to day 365. Take it away, Zach. It's been a year since the lockdown started. Whoops.
Day 365, we're stuck in isolation. Cases keep on getting worse throughout our careless nation. Thought that it'd be done by now, we're filled with your frustration. Day 365, we're stuck in isolation. I've seen my friend 6 feet away while sitting on my lawn. But I think change is coming now that Donald Trump is gone. People are getting vaccinated, but I have been told I'm last in line because I'm a healthy 21-year-old. Oh, day 365, we're stuck in isolation. Missed my birthday, Halloween, and brother's graduation. Thought that it would simply be a super long staycation. Day 365, we're stuck in isolation. My school is still online, I'm doing homework in my bed. I've seen so many TV shows, I think my brain is dead. And even though I love my home and roommate very much, it's been so long since I have felt another human's touch. Oh, day 365, we're stuck in isolation. It might be a pain, but it's our moral obligation. We can't leave our house until we get a vaccination. Day 365, we're stuck in isolation. I miss the beach and Disneyland and going out to eat. But if we all are careless, then this virus we won't beat. It's more important that we do not get our loved ones sick. So be mature and stay inside, don't be a f***ing dick. Go, oh, day 365, we're stuck in isolation. Cases keep on getting worse throughout our careless nation. Thought that it'd be done by now, we're filled with your frustration. Day 365, we're day 365, we're day 365, we're stuck in isolation.
Boom. That is Zach Timpson. And for those of you who are here for Long Live Rock, that probably gave you a little bit of culture shock. Talented young man who is making some really cool music videos. All right. So quick public service reminder. Saturday night, 2 a.m., it automatically becomes 3 a.m., we lose an hour. And so for people like me who don't sleep well at night, we're screwed. So try to get some rest this weekend, okay? What I'm going to play for you now, I told you we've got the interview coming up with my friends John McHugh and Gary Spivak. But I want to show you the trailer for the movie they made. So again, these are our two old friends of mine who produced and directed this film. You'll hear in the interview how they came to this. But it premiered last night because we're in the age of COVID. It was a virtual premiere. It was done online. There was a Q&A afterwards, but nobody, it was no big red carpet or anything like that. There are reviews in the papers today. There's a review in the New York Times, which was kind of lukewarm. You can go seek it out for yourself. I do want to show you the trailer. And then after the trailer, enjoy the interview. And hey, long live rock, everyone. All right. Here we go, I think. Like this. Yeah.
Nothing's like a rock show, man.
It's a place of solidarity.
Your average American isn't seeing the heavy rock artists on the award shows or radio. They can sometimes believe that, oh, rock doesn't exist anymore in the way it used to.
I don't want to be on morning talk shows having to be nice because hard rock's all accepted and you know, it looks good for Kathy Lee and Hoda.
Generally speaking, rock is dead.
I don't listen to anybody who says rock is dead.
All the disenfranchised feel that they belong to something that's much bigger than themselves.
I'm a whole different person when I'm at one of these concerts. You can de-stress your life and just be in the moment.
That symbiotic relationship between the fan and the band, it's integral.
It's a cool vibe between the bands. It's like a big family.
I don't know what compels people to want to jump on top of other people.
She just said, I want to serve you. I have to pull her up on top of me.
Rock and roll's dead, you can kill me right now!
Definitely. definitely my mom trip, my therapy.
There's nothing more mesmerizing than a mosh pit.
It's altering, and in an altered state, people do things that they wouldn't otherwise do.
I don't like the Walden Path.
It's just warfare.
Law enforcement, it's life or death a lot of times. Prisoners, they'll come up to me and they'll be like, have you heard this new song? Gilkey was an inmate here. We kind of sparked a kindred friendship of music from that.
Music has the ability to heal the human soul like nothing else can.
The first time I went to a festival in my chair, my brother was gassing me. It's like, I bet you won't do it. I'm like, yes, I will.
I see a lady in a wheelchair fucking crowd surfing. That's rock and roll.
So whether you're a Republican, a Democrat,
oh my God, it's John Kasich.
When the music catches you, it doesn't matter. We're all one.
Myself and the music I'm making in the audience is one of the most important relationships in my life. It's a real connection that's more than like, we're going to go play a show. There's an ocean of people. There's a check at the end of the day. Like, don't tell anybody, but I do this for free.
Long live rock. Celebrate the chaos. All right, here we go. Because it's two old friends who made a movie. It's like, you know, hey, kids, let's put on a show, except this is the big time. So Jonathan McHugh and Gary Spivak. John is the director and Gary is one of the producers of Long Live Rock, Celebrate the Chaos. First of all, congratulations, you guys. This is so cool. Are you like overwhelmed at this point?
I mean, I think I've counted them up. I think I did like 30 interviews, and Gary's probably done at least maybe the same or around, you know, we did a bunch together, which was fun like this. And of course it's fun. I mean, you know, Gary and I are like, we've known each other for 20 years.
More 30, than that.
I mean, keep on saying 20. It's 30, by the way.
Easy. It's got to be.
90 is 30. Oh, it's fucking crazy. I can't believe it.
Right?
Anyway, we play a lot of tennis together. We play softball together. Our wives. Are good friends. So the fact that you think about it, you can actually come up with an idea on a phone call and say, yeah, let's do this, and actually do it is like most people come up with an idea, but most people can never execute. But we did it, and that's kind of cool when you look back at it, you know?
It's very cool. And for, you know, to maintain friendships all these years is one thing. To be able to do it in a work atmosphere is even better. And especially when the work atmosphere is fun. You know, in my current life, people don't get that my work life back in the 90s was so intertwined with my personal life that it, you know, everything was work related, but it was all fun too, because we were in the music industry and it was great. And that's how I know you guys. We were just talking off the air, and you said 20 years. I've been gone from LA for 20 years.
It's over
30 years. So I met you two, I think, when I was at KLOS, and I was there from 90 to 94. When you two were both doing promotion at Elektra Records, right?
Yeah, and that was the heyday. We had Metallica. We had Motley Crue. Who else did we have then, Gary? We had George Lynch. The Lynch Mob, Gary, remember?
Yeah, we had The Cure and Sugar Cubes and this Delight and all this great hip hop. And you know, Nicole, you're absolutely right. It was this really like the heyday. It was a glory time because our friends, my friends, were the business friends. There was no show friends and show business.
Yeah, there was no separation.
It was really, I haven't thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. We hung out together. We partied together. In fact, we're the November 3rd and 4th birthday crew here.
Right.
John and McHugh, and we used to share birthday parties. And
yes.
I don't it's think of you, right? In the old days.
I'm sorry. And then, Nicole, you moved on to another station, and Jill and I with Joel Amsterdam. Very similar vibe, actually, with Long Live Rock. We started an acoustic benefit to help out the homeless issue in the west side of LA, which, by the way, is still a major issue.
Worse than ever.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
In fact, Gary, it was called Gimme Shelter, and you bring it up. I pulled a clip. This is from 1996. at that station, KSCA. You came up one, it was, I think, the sixth year. You brought up, well, here, let's just, I just pulled like 2 minutes of that. Here we go.
Dream.
Oh, wow. Duncan Sheik in the Music Hall at FM 101.9. We are, I'm surrounded by wonderfully talented musicians here, and it's just a fraction of the group that's going to be on stage tonight at the Roxy for Gimme Shelter 96. Let's take a second here and talk about this event. Gary Spivak is with us. He and his wife Jill and Joel Amsterdam have put this event together. Is this the sixth year?
Sixth year, seventh show. We even did it twice in 1 year once. That's so cool. Yeah.
Well, and it is a benefit for the homeless and for low-income families. The money this year is going to go to the St. Joseph Center in Venice. What do they do?
They're a low-income and family housing charity, philanthropy, and center where they do everything from help families out. They help families out.
They help families out.
They have a job education program, so if anybody on the street can walk in and help find a job, they have a cafe called the Rose Cafe, which employs homeless people for cooking and waiter and waitresses, and people can also eat there as well. So
now tonight, the ticket price, I think, is $22.
Wow. $22. Tickets, unbelievably, are still available. A few left, though.
Wow.
I say this every year, but this year is easily the best lineup we've ever had.
Absolutely.
In terms of, like, in this room alone, it's very humbling, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It's so eclectic, but the artists are so great.
So we'll be at the Roxy. It's tonight. The music starts at 8 o'clock. The lineup is Gus Satchel, Susanna Hoffs, Jeremy Toback, Duncan Sheik, Peter Himmelman, Ben Harper, and Emmy Lou Harris. Emmy Lou is also with us here. The last time I saw you, I think, was at the Grammys, and you had just won a Grammy for Wrecking Ball.
Right.
Congratulations again. It's a wonderful album.
So it went like that, and then I talked to Emmy Lou for a while. She played Susanna Hoffs, of course, from the Bengals, played live Duncan Sheik, and every year you would bring artists up like this to play live. And I got to say, you know, listening back to that and watching Long Live Rock, Celebrate the Chaos, boy, you straddle every world or of the rock music world, every angle. I mean, that's one extreme to another, though, the sort of folky acoustic stuff that we played at KSCA to Metallica and the bands featured in this film. So, Gary, what world are you in now, or do you straddle them still?
Well, first off, thank you for that trip down memory lane. You had Emmy Lou Harris, Duncan Sheik, and that's
and Susanna Hoffs in awesome. The studio wow. together. You brought them.
Oh my God!
You don't even know how good you are, kid.
I think I was in the same car with Duncan Sheik that day, who became like a Broadway phenom.
That's right.
But I'm going to steal a line from Dave Grohl because that was 1996.
Yep.
And somebody replayed an interview that Dave did like in 1993, and he goes, "Yeah," and he listens to his voice, and he's like, "Yeah, my balls didn't drop yet."
No, I was going to say that, Gary. Your voice sounds like really different, and it's funny that you don't think about it, but the maturity. And does your voice change? And you hear old people with their more gruff voice, right? You don't think about it, but like your voice is noticeably different.
It's like an octave higher.
Yeah, but you know what? Mine was too. So the speed might have been off on that tape. I mean, that was an old cassette. So, because I sounded, I can judge by my voice. And although when I listen back to some stuff from those days, my voice is noticeably higher too. We're all old now. we get so old. That's part of it. But some things don't ever change.
Back to your question. You know, back then, as thinking, you know, it was like MTV Unplugged was really big and Storytellers.
Yeah.
And the idea of an acoustic benefit, you know, K-Rock had a almost acoustic thing.
That's right.
I remember thinking the acoustic benefits, you know, acoustic music was really hot. And it's I think it's really popular again. So that was just kind of the sign of the times. And, you know, Nicole, when I left the record label world, I just felt there was this big wide open lane that wasn't being served. You know, there were some really good festivals out there in the early 2000s, like Coachella and Bonnaroo and stuff that I personally as a fan would go to. But as a business person, what was missing, especially in America, was the like who's putting on the great rock festival? And I don't mean metal or punk, just like rock and roll. It was really underserved. And that's how that all started. And the fans were just so hungry, and they were underserved, and they would come and sell out, and they would go crazy at these festivals, crowd surfing and moshing. And I would call like John McHugh and our friends back at home and go like, you don't understand what's happening here. This is like, this doesn't happen in LA unless it's like Rage Against the Machine or something. Mm-hmm. Just so.
And then I would show up, and then I would show up no matter what.
Yeah. And so I finally booked Metallica, the King of Kings, for Rock on the Range. And John and I were banning around an idea to capture what these festivals are, because they're so not known, but yet they do such big business. And when we had Metallica, and then we got Q Prime to say okay for Lars to be a part of this documentary idea we had, it was game on. And just like Gimme Shelter, you know, there's ignorance is bliss sometimes. I didn't know what, can I swear on this?
Absolutely.
Right?
Whatever.
Yeah, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing with Gimme Shelter, and I didn't know what the fuck I was doing producing a movie, nor did I know what the fuck I was doing putting on America's Biggest Rock Festival either. But it's just like, you just do it.
You just do
and
it.
And you make a mistake along the way, and you learn from it. It's what I tell my kids every day. Uh-huh. Make a mistake, it's fine. Just learn from it. Jake.
Definitely. So you've been in the concert promotion business for a long time now, because we haven't spoken in years.
I know. And I've always enjoyed following you on socials, by the way.
And I owe you an apology, Gary, because it was some months ago that I had nurtured a friendship with this comedian, J.L. Coven, who does the best Donald Trump ever. And I cooked up a scheme with him to come on the show as Trump, like he's calling in. And so I promoted it. And you're like on Facebook going, really, you have Trump? I said, come listen. And then I think you got mad at me because it turned out obviously it wasn't.
Yeah, like, what are
Donald
you doing?
Trump's not coming on my show, believe me. So I'm sorry for that.
You got me. As we've all had different career paths, so mm-hmm. I took the path of the getting into festival producing, and because I just love the live experience. And it kind of goes, I learned some things on Gimme Shelter. I really did, on booking.
I'll bet.
And taking care of artists and treating artists the way they should be treated. Because, especially Gimme Shelter, we never paid a penny.
No.
And we had Ben Harper and Emmylou Harris. And
on that show, right.
Big acts, yeah. And Jewel and... and we had
Amy Mann and Michael Penn and just the list went on. I mean, I should go through the years because.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So I always remembered like they're really giving their time to do something. And I never took that for granted. And so I use that same kind of feeling when I deal with artists today. And I think it shows, with DWP where I work, we're known for being really an artist friendly promotion festival company, as some festival companies aren't. They're really, treat them like sheep or something.
Right. So what have you been doing for the past year? Because obviously COVID, we're not out going to concerts.
Yeah, it's been
You've been
really
making
hard.
A movie?
as a company, we've pivoted and we're really into pay-per-view, some social distance shows. But I will tell you, things are gearing up. We finally have an adult in the room and an actual administration. Yep. Who has a national game plan, and you could see the results. Things are getting better. So we're very, very optimistic about like late summer into the fall.
That right.
We're going to have festivals and one big one in Florida too.
Oh, really? What part of Florida?
Daytona Beach.
Ah, okay. Well, I can still drive up there. Now, okay, we're going to get back to that in a second. Jonathan McHugh, I see you looking down because you're probably answering messages on your phone. But John McHugh.
There's a lot of activity today for some reason.
I know. Well, first of all, the movie Long Live Rock, Celebrate the Chaos, premiered last night. Now, it's a premiere in COVID territory, so it was an online big premiere, people watching from everywhere, and then you had a Q&A afterwards. Was it still exciting? Was it still great?
It's super weird. You're sitting at your house and your pajamas watching the movie. I watched the whole thing again in its entirety for the 845th time. But I just felt compelled to do it and to watch it. And of course, 60 minutes in, the internet goes out and just pops out and disappears. And I got to call my guy and get a code to reboot in. But, you know, you think about, like, I was watching the Golden Globes, right? And the people are, like, winning a Golden Globe, which is a real deal thing. And they're, like, sitting at their house. Right? And there's nowhere to go. There's no party to go to. It's like, so, you know, you'd love to have more. Mm. But the reality is we have abundance in our life. Gary and I are so blessed with great wives, great family, great career. We're still, we can still run around the court and do stuff. And softball's coming back, Gary, next week, by the way. So you want more always. That's what we are. That's those kind of people we are. And that's how we ended up making this movie together, because we said, hey, we can do this. We don't really have the money. We don't really have the bandwidth, but we're going to do it because that's who we are. And we're passionate about this topic. So
now this is your directorial debut. Although, John, I know that you veered off from, you know, record promotion into music supervising, which is placing music in movies or commercials or television or whatever. I know you've been in the movie lane, right?
Yeah, I've gone back and forth between producing and music supervising for the last 20 years. I mean, wow. I did the Britney Spears movie Crossroads. It was the first movie I produced 20 years ago.
Wow.
And everything up to Janis Joplin 5 years ago and Justin Bieber 8 years ago. And, you know, I'm constantly working on making movies or TV shows and music supervising, which is kind of the day job, along with being a professor at American University, which I really enjoy that, and also giving back. So, yeah, just whatever it takes to be an entrepreneur. I haven't had a real job in literally, I think it's almost 10 years now since I left Island Def Jam. And so the aspect of trying to feed the family and make a living as an independent 50-plus-year-old kind of guy is difficult. But if you're fueled by doing things like this, especially with your friends, like Gary and I working together, and really sometimes we'll go at each other for different things. And, you know, I agree with this, or you did this, you know. But at the end of the day, we come together and nothing gets in the way of the friendship. And that's the most important thing you could ever do, because you hear about those stories of friends going to business all the time and not being friends anymore.
Right.
And I just refused, you know, I'd rather not do business and rather lose money if that meant losing a friend, you know. So I think it was just a really blessed thing that we came together on this, and we put my resources together with his resources and our relationships, which between the two of us right now, we know a lot of friends.
Oh, my God. And I looked at the list of the other names who are producers and executive producers, and there many of them are familiar. You got Michael Plenn on there. You got, your friend Jonathan, who I never really knew,
Jonathan Black, an early believer and helped raise money for us. And my friend Rob Steinberg, who is the guy, if you guys have ever seen the movie 12 Years a Slave, he's the guy that finally frees you from the movie and comes in and frees. He's the guy who comes and frees the slave.
Seriously? So that movie was brilliant.
Rob, right?
She
frees Platt.
I did. How did I not know that? Oh my God, this is so wild. Okay, now I'll have to watch it again. And I thought he looked familiar, but I thought he's an actor.
Yeah, no, he's an actor. Rob's an actor. But anyway, you're confusing two people, Rob Steinberg, who you know, and Jonathan Platt, who you know.
Right.
But anyway, but, so yeah.
Fun fact, Rob, isn't his name in the movie Platt?
Yeah, yes.
Right, and he frees Platt at the end of the movie.
Okay.
Was that true?
Yes, that was his name.
His name is Platt?
Yes.
I had no idea. That's hilarious.
Wow. Coincidence. So now, here you have this big movie. And by the way, the premiere, again, was last night. And now it's available as a streaming rental, right? So people can go to longliverockmovie.com. And right there, you can rent the movie. Have a party and do your own, small, you know, socially distant party right now, and watch it in the comfort of your home.
I also think, Nicole, I think the Q&A is also attached. We did last night. We did a great Q&A with Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm, Jacoby Shaddix from Papa Roach, Miles Kennedy plays with Slash, Eddie Trunk, the legendary metalhead, hosted with us. And it was really good. We did about 45 minutes. And, you know, Jacoby really opened up about some interesting stuff, which I won't talk about now in case anybody want to watch it. But it was really nice. And Lizzie got a little teary and emotional about how rock and roll has, you know, been such a part of their life. And, you know, none of us have gone this long without going to a concert.
Oh.
So it's really, that's why we decided to release it on the 1 year anniversary of the lockdown. Little did we know that our friend Joe Biden would decide to speak at the same exact time
right.
on premiere, but what are you going to do? I taped it. So anyway, so yeah, we put it together. We got it out there. We'd love to see it on the big screen because we have seen it on the big screen. We did a cast and crew screening in Columbus, played amazing. We screened it at the Grammy Museum. Mm. We screened it at great rooms, like, you know, we're researching like CAA and William Morris for, you know, notes from people. And, you know, you hear it on a great sound system in a theater. And rocks. So not quite, you know, the TV at your house, but it is what it is right now, you know?
Right. Now, you know, and it's no secret to my listeners here, even though I talk politics, music is a big part of my world, and I bring in artists, and I talk music, and I, you know, it's all intertwined. I can't help it. In fact, Jill Sobule is going to be here Monday. We're going to write a song together. So, you know, we do a little bit of everything. But the music that's featured in this film is not the stuff that I listen to on my iPod. It's just, you know, I'm more the KSEA, the artist that came and played at Give Me Shelter. But I still found the film fascinating because rock festivals are a different lifestyle. And this, you do cover the lifestyle here. And the closest thing I could, the closest analogy I can make was like a Dead concert or, you know, a Deadhead tour where it's the culture that follows the band. It's the same kind of thing. But you point out that this is this hardcore rock and roll where people, the mosh pits and the body surfing and stuff. But these are you have people in all generations and business people who go to these festivals and become their alter egos, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, it's, you know, the classic line, you can't judge a book by its cover. You know, everybody thinks the metalheads are these, you know, and some of them are, you know, headbanging, tattooed, piercings, wearing black in the 100 degree day in the summer. Right. But, you know, look, it's the ethos that they bought into. The music does something for them. It can be therapeutic for them. And it's something that I had not really experienced much. Gary had a lot more eyes on it because he was at all these festivals. He's like, yo, you've got to come see this stuff. And when he booked Metallica for his 10th anniversary, he said, you got to come. And then he's like, but if you're going to come, we got to shoot. Like, we got to. And I was like, Gary, we don't have any money to shoot. He's like, we got to figure it out. He goes, I'll put in some couple K. And I said, all right, I'll put in a couple K and we'll get a crew and we'll shoot. And that's what we did. And then we edited a sizzle reel together and we had some really compelling stuff. And we had rock stars and we had great fans and we had people standing over on each other, crowd surfing. And we're like, and we ended up getting a deal for the movie. So it's just, you never know sometimes when you just go for it. And that's what I tell my students today. Like, you know, I don't know what you're doing during this pandemic, but you better be doing something. You better be figuring out how to move the ball, whether you're learning programs like Adobe Photoshop or editing or Pro Tools, whatever. You better be getting skills and pushing yourself out there and learning. And, you know, I still learned a lot in this process of, you know, mistakes I made that I wouldn't do again. And so even at this age, you're still making mistakes. And like Gary said, even on the benefit you guys did, he learned stuff, you know, and that's 40, whatever, 30.
A long time ago. Yeah. No, it's true. And we have to keep reinventing ourselves. Look, I never in a million years thought I was going to wind up doing a political talk show. But here I am. And I've been doing this for 10 years or more. So, you know, go figure. There were a few roadblocks sort of in the way. The night before the big festival that was the centerpiece of this film, Chris Cornell died. And so you dealt with that and you went off into the drug abuse issue. How much of a loop did that throw you for, aside from the personal heartache that Chris Cornell died?
Well, I'll let Gary jump on the what he had to deal with first, and then we'll cut into, well, then I'll jump into how we had to work it into the film and why.
Okay.
I mean, it's an entirely, you know, for another show, you can do a whole other show on this one. But yeah, when, like I said, when we booked Metallica, they were headlining Sunday and Soundgarden was to be the Friday night headliner of this festival. Sold out. Of course it did. Cause these are two giants in the genre. So Friday was to be Soundgarden and Thursday morning, I got a call in my hotel at about five, somewhere between 5 and 6 a.m. from my partner saying Chris Cornell is dead.
Oh,
and not only did we lose, you know, a hero and an icon, but we lost a headliner.
Yeah.
You know, and people pay good money to for this band. So we had to go into crisis mode and we had to act. And meanwhile, this was day one of John and I's idea to shoot a film.
Oh, my.
So, and then on top of that, there were not one, but two storms coming in during this weekend. We had two evacuations during this weekend. And it was, I have to say, and I told John this recently, and I hadn't thought about it. Without the film and without getting interviews done, I might have lost my head, because that kept me really busy and focused and away from people who I didn't need to talk to. Every road manager and band, like, hey, what's going on? When's the band? Are we back? Are we back? Are the lights on? So, and then coupled with the fact of this, the death of this monster human
right.
that touched so many people, of Chris Cornell. So again, the two interviews we had lined up for the green light of this film was Lars of Metallica and Chris Cornell.
Cornell. Oh,
then all the other bands came, would follow, like, yeah, Metallica and Soundgarden are in. Well, we're in
yeah,
too.
Of course. Right.
So, and John was really excited to interview Chris because he had worked with him at A&M and loves the band like we all do. So, like, you know, we didn't have a story arc for this, but Chris Cornell died. A couple months later, Chester Bennington of Linkin right. Park took his life. And we had to delve into this. Like, you can't avoid not talking about substance abuse and depression and what artists and fans go through with our daily lives. So I think we tackled it really well. And what came out of it, which I was really happy about, was how music, specifically this genre of music, can be a real healing force. It can be a real unifying thing and bring people together.
Right. And the, one of the beautiful parts of the film is you spend so much time talking to the fans, to actual concert goers, to people who this is their lifestyle. And they go to these festivals and they, you know, they may be an accountant, in, you know, during the week, and then on the weekend they let loose, and how this affects them. So, John, you go as a director, a first time director, and you've got your, you know, your, I guess, your storyboard figured in your mind. And then this happens. What do you do?
Well, like I said before, it was really in watching the movie all these times and trying to find this perfect tone and how much time do you spend on this topic.
Yeah.
And, you know, the movie comes crashing down in a positive and negative way because you're on this ride and then all of a sudden it's like, Cornell dies, drugs, alcohol, bad. We have to analyze why, how the fans are affected by it. And I was watching it last night. I timed out the segment. It was like 15 minutes. And then I was reading a review and it was said the all too brief detour into the substance abuse. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, that was such a long segment that we wrestled with for so long. Like, how long should this thing be? How much time do you give it? You know,
right.
What's it about? The movie took a real big turn there, and that changed the movie forever. And obviously for me, it took it as a positive. And Gary, because you can't not talk about it. It seemed like, you know, you'd skim over such an important topic, you couldn't do it. So we thought we gave it a really good time on it. But it did change the fabric of the film when you start to analyze what the film is. And how many different themes and that we're trying to get across
yeah.
within one film. It's a very difficult process. I mean, like Gary's saying, this could easily be a series of what goes into making these festivals.
Ooh, there's an idea. A series yeah. on rock festivals. Ooh.
Right. Again, not a mainstream genre, so they don't get the look like Coachella would get the look
right.
or Bonnaroo would get the look. And that's part of the magic of it, that these fans and the bands especially, I mean, this is what they do. They yeah. tour. They're in a bus, you know, for a good chunk of the year. The Skillet piece for me is also one of my favorites. Like, these people live on a bus basically. You know, their kids are like, home is the bus, right?
Yeah.
They take their family, they bring a tutor, and they school them on the road. And it's like, that's like a gypsy
troubadour.
Lifestyle,
these are modern day troubadours, right? Because they are traveling from town to town. That's what they do. And yeah. again, everybody has been sidelined for the last year. So, you know, this, you did all the shooting, obviously, when tours were still happening. And you know, you did deal with the pandemic and everything shutting down. And as you said, I think, John, in one of your interviews, it's like, we hope this will tide people over until we can get the fuck back out there again or something that.
I'm getting a lot of that feedback, too, that they're happy. People are happy they get to be part of this now.
Cool. Well, again, it is available to stream at your convenience. I guess that's
you get it for a month. If you rent it, you get it for a month. You can watch it like five times or something, or have some friends over, whatever you want to do.
Cool. Longliverockmovie.com. Gary Spivak, Jonathan McHugh. I'm so proud of you guys. I'm so happy for you. This is awesome. Are you going to do it again?
I'm going to continue to do it. I have two more films that I'm prepping right after this. One about the Comic-Con culture and one that I was brought into about Muhammad Ali and his relationship to his hometown of Louisville, Kentucky. So,
Now, are you directing those or are you producing?
One I'm co-directing and one I'm producing.
Nice. I'm so proud of you.
Gary and I are searching for our next topic.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry?
We're on the hunt.
Okay. Well, yeah. I do like the idea of like a, you know, weekly show for Netflix or something on the touring life or something. You know, hey, you need someone down in Florida. And Daytona, when? This summer? Who's going to be there?
It's going to be November 11 through 14, Daytona International Speedway.
Oh, boy. That's legendary.
I feel a birthday celebration coming on. You
and hopefully we'll have an announce, you know, in sometime in later April on that for bands and get the floodgates open. And in the meantime, I happen to think this movie, Long Live Rock, serves like this great purpose. Like, we can't go to shows today or next week, but, you know, live it up and watch this movie and, you know, celebrate the chaos and turn it up when you watch it.
Absolutely. And rock is not dead. And another time we can get into what rock entails, because it entails this world and my musical world, which are, you know, miles apart, but it's all rock and roll.
Yeah.
True. To me. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
If you have great songs and you're a great entertainer, it's universal. It's universal.
Absolutely. I'm so proud of you guys. I know, John, I know you've got a meeting to get to. Gary, it's so great to see you. I thank you so much for coming on and sharing this with us. And I'm just thrilled for you.
That trip down memory lane with Gary's benefit. That's so cool.
Oh, you got it. Gary, I've got a few of those that I will email you links so you can hear them.
Jill would love to hear these. So
oh,
please,
you got it. I will send you whatever I've got. I'll go through them this weekend. All right. Thank you, guys. Great seeing you, and congratulations on the movie. Long live rock, everyone. Take care.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that a fraction as much as I did, because you got to, you know, look, we were young together. You know, they went off to be successful, and I moved to Florida. But I'm so proud. I am. I feel, you know, like old friends. I'm very proud of them. I know sometimes I get a little indulgent with the music stuff, but I'm glad you guys, I'm watching, because we had to tape that. We taped that about an hour before showtime. And then I almost lost the tape because I forgot to put the suffix on the .mp4 on the recording, and it disappeared. So 10 minutes before airtime, I'm still searching different files on my computer to find the raw footage so that I could pull it in and play it, but it all worked out. And I'm glad. Thank you guys in the chat room who enjoyed it as well. And then Monday, as I said before, she's been on the program before. Jill Sobule. You know Jill Sobule. You know the song, when they say they want our America back, what the fuck does it mean? That Jill Sobule. So she, I noticed the other day online, she was promoting that she's doing a songwriting class for, you know, on Zoom with a small number of people. And I thought, well, how fun would this be? Have Jill come on and together we can write a song. And in fact, she owes me a theme song. Years ago, Jill Sobule promised me a theme song for the show and she never delivered. So I thought we can do a group thing. I'll have Jill Sobule on the Zoom. You guys can call in and contribute a line or something. We'll have fun. All right. Do you remember fun? See, we had fun before Donald Trump. We have to learn how to have fun again, but we're getting there. Along those lines, if you have a warped sense of humor, like, you know, you must if you listen here, the South Park vaccination special, you must watch. It is hysterically funny. I've read something online that said it wasn't funny. It's really, really funny. And I'm not big on South Park. My husband is, but I'm not. But it I promise you, you will laugh your ass off. Us off. So go watch that. And don't forget to set your clocks ahead, an hour ahead. Saturday night at 2 becomes 3. And I'll see you back here Monday. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you for hanging with me and for your support of this program. I can't thank you enough. All right. Have a great weekend. And I'll see you back here Monday. Have a good one, everyone.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
President Biden on Thursday signed the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package, the American Rescue Plan Act, into law, setting into motion the distribution of checks up to $1,400 for most Americans and billions of dollars in aid to schools, businesses, and state, local, and tribal governments to help them contend with the pandemic. The bill also extends extra unemployment benefits and provides more funding for vaccine distribution. The key measures in the package are predicted to slash the poverty rate by about a third through enhanced food stamp benefits, housing and unemployment assistance, and reliable streams of income for struggling families and workers. The bill passed without even one Republican vote. Congressional Democrats may have to keep going it alone as they take on the next big items on Biden's agenda, from infrastructure to tackling the climate crisis and immigration issues. President Biden then delivered his first primetime address to the nation Thursday evening, providing a stark contrast to the former guy. Kind of a refreshing change to have a president whose focus is on the American people instead of himself.
I will not relent until we beat this virus, but I need you. The American people, I need you. Beating this virus and getting back to normal depends on national unity. And national unity isn't just how politicians vote in Washington, what the loudest voices say on cable or online. Unity is what we do together as fellow Americans. Because if we don't stay vigilant and the conditions change, then we may have to reinstate restrictions to get back on track. And please, we don't want to do that again.
As you'd expect from a leader, Biden laid out some ambitious goals for beating this pandemic, rather than claiming that
it's going to disappear one day. It's like a miracle. It will disappear.
So President Biden called for states to open coronavirus vaccinations to all U.S. adults by May 1st and urged Americans to get vaccinated, saying that would be the key to making small group celebrations possible for the 4th of July.
If we do this together, by July the 4th, there's a good chance you, your families and friends will be able to get together in your backyard or in your neighborhood and have a cookout and a barbecue and celebrate Independence Day.
From the It's About Time files, the House of Representatives on Thursday passed two gun control bills, one seeking to close a loophole by expanding background checks to online and gun show sales, and the other providing 10 business days for federal background checks before gun sales can be licensed. 8 Republicans voted for the first bill, only 2 backed the second. Now comes the tough part as it heads to the Senate, which is split 50-50, and Democrats cannot afford to lose even one vote. Although things appear to be improving on the COVID-19 fight, experts are warning that tens of thousands more people in the U.S. will die before we get to a recovery phase, perhaps reaching a pandemic total of 598,000 by July 1st. In his speech, President Biden asked Americans to follow the CDC guidelines on masks and social distancing to keep coronavirus dangers at bay. Former acting Secretary of Defense under Donald Trump, Chris Miller, who was in office on the day of the January 6th Capitol uprising, pointing the finger at Donald Trump, saying that without him, it's, quote, pretty much definitive that the attack would not have occurred. Miller pointed to the speech that Trump delivered at the rally before the insurrection. Quote, the question is, would anybody have marched on the Capitol and overrun the Capitol without the president's speech? He asked. Quote, I think it's pretty much definitive that wouldn't have happened. Mississippi Republican Governor Tate Reeves has signed the first statewide anti-trans laws of 2021, banning transgender athletes from competing in women's sports in the state's public schools and colleges. And another type of horrible legislation is also gaining steam to restrict voting access. Spurred on by Republican legislators in response to false claims of voter fraud during the 2020 election. And we're on trial watch. Ex-Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin now faces an additional murder charge in the death of George Floyd after a state judge reinstated a count of third-degree murder. Third-degree murder generally applies to a case in which a person does something eminently dangerous to others with no regard for human life. The added charge provides another potential pathway to conviction. Chauvin is already facing charges of second-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter. He's pleaded not guilty to all three. Jury selection began on Tuesday. Five jurors have already been seated. Opening statements will probably happen around March 29th. And finally, another lie proven wrong. Remember this?
If he's elected, the stock market will crash.
Yeah, no. Again, the Dow is a lousy indicator of how the economy is doing as a whole. But just to debunk another of Trump's tens of thousands of lies he told while in office, the Dow closed Thursday at a record high of 32,485.59. surging at the very moment the president signed the massive American Relief Plan Act. Go figure. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.